Blog Talk Radio.
This is Monica Leal welcoming you to the LL Research radio program In the Now with Carla L. Ruckert and Jim McCarty. Today is Friday, September 28th, 2012. Carla L. Ruckert is an author, mystic, seeker, and primary channel for LL Research. Jim McCarty is Carla Ruckert's husband, the scribe for the Raw Contact, and president of LL Research. Please visit the websites llresearch.org, home to over 1,500 channeling transcripts, 11 publications, the Law of One material, interviews, speeches, and more, and the community website bringforth.org. That's bring, the number 4, th.org, featuring forums, blogs, chat rooms, and more. I'll be asking Carla and Jim questions that come from you. If you would like to ask a question live on the air, please call 646-595-2294 and press the 1 key when prompted. Again, that number is 646-595-2294. Or you can join the chat room at blogtalkradio.com/LLResearch. When submitting questions, please remember this is a Law of One Q&A. Try to keep your questions as spiritually oriented as possible. Again, I'm Monica Leal, and I'm talking with Carla L. Ruckert and Jim McCarty of LL Research. Carla and Jim, I hear you had some interesting changes going on this week. Anything you want to share with us?
Well, we did. Jim, start us off, and I'll continue.
Okay.
Well, you can talk about whatever you like to talk about, actually.
Okay. For the longest time this summer, I've been uninterested in my noon sandwiches. As I'm cutting grass between jobs, I have a sandwich, and it's usually either some sort of pork or beef or turkey. And I'd been getting less and less interested, just trying to figure out something else to eat. Something just didn't seem right. And finally, I decided that those slabs of meat I was putting on my sandwich every week came from animals, and that they were live, sentient beings, and that some of them probably had names, and that they had lives to live until they were cut short, and they were cut short so I could eat their meat. And it just didn't seem right. Finally, this week, all of a sudden, I decided it was time for me to become a vegetarian, because ethically, I just could not support the slaughter of animals anymore. And it's something that, there weren't any particular arguments about it that convinced me, and, you know, I added up one side and the other and decided to do this. It was just something that came from inside me. It said, this is the time to do this. You don't need to be eating meat anymore. And Carla's been really good to be looking up some protein substitutes for me, and I'm really grateful to her for that. I guess this is sort of like my spiritual journey in general. I mean, I really didn't wake up until late in life. I was 21 or so before I read my first spiritually oriented book and started thinking about what is life and who am I and where am I going. So it just seems like it was some sort of an inner clock that went off. The alarm rang and I heard the alarm, and here I am, a neophyte vegetarian.
And here I
am,
a neophyte vegetarian menu maker. So as Jim said, I got online and huffed around, and we fixed vegetarian Italian meatballs this week, and we found Gimme Lean beef substitute, and you make it up just like you make up any meatball or meatloaf, with onion and salt and Worcestershire sauce. By the way, there is a vegetarian Worcestershire sauce. I found that interesting. Egg whites from the store and some seasoned breadcrumbs and soy milk and some onion, and mix it all up together. And Jim goes, man, this is really good. You know, it's not like this is good for vegetarian. There was no asterisk, you know. So I've been encouraged, and I've found substitutes for ham and chicken and bacon and sausage. You know, there are a lot of people out here that are buying substitutes because they like their food, their comfort food, but they don't want to eat meat. So I was really tickled to death that I was able to give him something that he liked to eat. And I got him some hummus with in a pita pocket, you know, going for lunches. And he seems to be happy as a little clam. And I think probably one thing I learned, Monica, which you already know, is that both vegetarians and non-vegetarians eat way too much protein. So it's not an urgent matter to scramble around and try to get more protein. You know, it's something that you need to pay attention to. But, golly, I found a recipe that looks really good. I want to try it next week for vegetarian mashed potatoes. And you put a couple cans of beans in there with them after they're thoroughly macerated by the
blender.
I just hit my cat. I was gesturing in the air. I'm sorry, Pickwick. Anyway, put them in the blender and whee. And, you know, it tastes like mashed potatoes. The mashed potato wins out, you know. But there's tons of fiber and protein there. So, you know, you can be smart about cooking all of the food groups. And I'm not just talking all four food groups that count tofu, as some people think, but, you know, all the food groups that you're used to eating so that you're not stuck with all of a sudden having to learn a whole new thing. Now, I did eat vegetarian for, I guess about a year and a half. I ate a macrobiotic diet. I was in the 70s. It was one of the things that I did, one of the early experiments to try and make myself feel better. And I thought, well, you know, let's try this out because it's helped so many people. Macrobiotic diets are, you know, not a fad. They're really good stuff. So I really got into it. I really enjoyed them. I love the brown rice. I love the seaweed. I loved everything about that. And it was so easy. But what I did was I prepared a lot of food at once, and I would fill a pie plate with a meal, and then I would freeze them. I would have like 30 of them, and then I would pull one out when I was hungry. And the only problem with this was that I discovered when half of my transverse colon was taken out that I can't eat rice. It got stuck in my transverse colon and split it in three pieces. I mean, nothing was coming through there for a while. And, you know, that's not good. So not everybody can do this thing. But I'm one of the rare people that can't, and most people can. I think that's the way it goes. I'm thrilled that Mickey is happier with his food. That's the main thing, because he was kind of grousing around about, you know, eating his lunch. And that's not good for a man that needs his food. He does hard physical labor 5 days a week, and he needs to get his food in. He needs to get the calories in, and he needs to feel good about it. So I'm just tickled about the whole thing. And as Gary pointed out, Carla, you're probably the only one on the planet that's had a sixth density entity to tell you that you should eat red meat sometimes. He says you should rest easy, which I thought was cute. But anyway, that was our big thing this week. Except I did get a little bit better, enough so that I was able to do some physical therapy for the first time. It was too hard before because it was so painful. And it's just, I'm gradually, you know, peeking above the waterline here and seeing myself get better. And it's wonderful. It's about, what, Jim, the 20th time I've started out on this journey?
I'd say so.
Yeah. And, you know, every time, you know, you start out with all kinds of good cheer and everything. And then somehow, something has always happened that just knocked me right back down in the abyss and underwater with pain. So, you know, you always hope, well, this time, here's hoping we're on the right track, and that's what I hope and pray this time. But on the other hand, I feel that wherever I am, that's where I'm supposed to be. There are no mistakes. So up and around or down and feeling some pain, I can still praise the Creator. I can still love everybody and accept the people love me back, and and be lifted up and, you know, hold the light, which is what everybody needs to do before we start doing outer work anyway. So I've had a lot of opportunities to work on inner work this last 2 years. But I was tickled. I went down to my neighbor's house. Jim had just told me that he planted six. It's a kind of hydrangea that likes the sun, called Little Lamb. Is that right?
Right, Little Lamb.
And my neighbor bought six of them, and Jim put them in, and they are just glorious. They bloom late, so it was wonderful, and I really enjoyed getting out. It was the first time that I'd been out just to have fun for, oh gosh, a couple of months. So how about you? I hear you had an exhausting week.
Oh, yeah, I feel like I've been on a roller coaster all week. Boy, you don't even want to hear about my week. It's been crazy, crazy. I mean, some of it was just intense, you know, just busy, busy, busy. But then, you know, my friend in the hospital and, you know, that's been, you know, going to see her, and that's been emotionally taxing as well as adding more things to do in the day. And then we had a little plumbing problem, and, yeah, it's just been a...
There is no such thing.
Not one of my
little.
Favorite weeks. Actually, kind of a major.
Yeah.
So we just hope it's not going to turn into a big, huge expense. They're going to come over in the morning. It's in one of those outdoor pipe busting things.
Oh, heavens.
But situations. Yeah. So anyway, pretty intense, stressful week for me. So this is relaxing, actually, to do this.
Well, good. Settle in there. Take a deep breath.
Yeah, but I'm so glad that you're doing better, Carla. You do sound good today. You really do.
Well,
so I'm real happy to hear that. And I know everybody that's praying for you is happy to hear that. And Jim, wow, that's, what can I say? I mean, I readily admit I'm a little biased in that area, having been a vegetarian for 30 years. So I'm just thrilled.
You think?
I think it's cool. But if anybody, Jim, if you or anybody else would like some tips, since you are exploring recipes, there is a wonderful thread that I started on the Bring Forth Forum in the forum number 2, health and diet section. There's a thread called Vegetarian Made Easy, Recipes and Spice, and it's got all kinds of tips and recipes, and that might give you some ideas. And it's really not that hard, and actually it gets to be kind of fun because you get to explore all kinds of foods that you may never have had before, you know, like you mentioned hummus. And you know, when my husband and I first got married, I had a lot of fun creating all kinds of dishes where you didn't miss the meat, you know, stuff like lasagna and enchiladas and, you know, stir fries and pizzas and just, you know, all kinds of things that are hearty, you know, vegetarian chili, you know, hearty, rich foods, you know, not just salads and celery sticks. So it can be a lot of fun. So
well,
good luck.
Check it out.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'm going to, and there's a few other threads on there too that are related, but that's the main one. I'm going to go ahead and move on to our opening riff tonight. And this is from Kuo, and it's from January 12th, 2008. This is from Kuo. It is ironic, is it not, that in the search for truth, the answers lie not in discovering that which can be known, but in discovering that the secrets to the mystery of transformation lie in unknowing and faith. Faith is the most powerful force in the universe, it being another name for realized or positively realized love. You live in a universe made of love. The original thought was a thought of unconditional love. As you transform, the core of your transformation is an awareness that has not been there before about the nature of your central or deepest self as being part of love itself, or the creative principle, which is the one great original thought of unconditional love.
Thank you, Monica. Sometimes I just do an I Ching in the material, and I did this week and came up with this, and I thought, perfect, because it's a really, really big mistake that people make when they are on the spiritual path and they're waking up and it feels so good and they're just so hungry, and they read book after book and go to weekend you know, seminar after weekend seminar, and they're inspired and inspired again and inspired again, but which one do you choose? Where's the center? Are you going to go work with some of the thoughts of you know, Christianity and related systems? Are you going to try for experiencing the Buddhist way, the yogi way of life? That it's all there for you to try, and it's just so exciting and so wonderful. And you actually can get distracted just pouring in book after book after book. I'm not saying that reading is bad. I generally read a book a day. However, I don't know if I'm ashamed or not. I don't think I am. I'm not much of a seeker when it comes to reading spiritual type books. I'm more of a romance and mystery reader. I like stories. I like problems to solve and so forth. I guess in the beginning, when I was I don't think I ever did read a lot. I was inspired by, you know, those 5 or 6 volumes of the teachings of the Far East, Masters of the Far East. Those are wonderful. I loved the Kabbalion. I just loved Paramahansa Yogananda's autobiography. There were some things that just made so much sense to me. And, of course, you know, reading in the saints in my own spiritual walk. But the center for me has always been that time I spent as a little toddler in my magic forest with Jesus, where he never said a word and just sat there and held my hand and looked into my eyes. And that was all I needed to know, because the love in his eyes was absolutely unconditional, and I could feel it in every fiber of my being. And I remember that to this day as if it happened this afternoon, and it's powerful within me. So, you know, at first my parents tried to tell me that it was just a dream, and they did succeed in making it impossible for me to go back to my magic forest. I understand that this happens a lot with when people see fairies, or, you know, somebody in the forest is telling them where the rare plants are, and then somebody says, no, you couldn't possibly have seen a fairy. You just came across it. Now, come on, fess up. Well, but they did see a fairy. But then after that, of course, because of the shaming of the authority figure, you think, okay, I can't do that anymore. And that's a real shame. But on the other hand, you have the memory of it. You have the truth of it. So when you try to build a system within yourself that works for you, the intellect certainly has a part. There's a good deal of analysis of yourself as you learn yourself, as you get to know yourself better, as you peel away the top layers of onion, the tough fibrous ones that aren't good to eat. You're getting to the thinner, sweet layers of that onion, and finding them fascinating and delicious as you go deeper and deeper into yourself. You can do a lot with the intellect. You can do a lot with logic and analysis. You can come up with a lot of realizations. But the problem with that is, if you stay in your head, if you stay in your intellect, you can only go so far. You cannot get into the upper chakras working with these energies. There needs to be a change, not in your thinking, but in your being. And that change comes to you because of your persistence in entering the silence and just waiting for the silence to teach you without words. it's difficult to see that at first. And a lot of times that happens with people that are fascinated with the Law of One. This is it, they say. You know, I've got to tell all my friends. I've got to read this. This is what the world needs and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, it may not be what your friend needs at all. Your friend may not be ready to wake up, and that's okay. It's one of the hardest things about waking up is to find out you can't just carry people with you because you want to. All you can do is be yourself and trust that that witness through the life itself is one day going to cause that person to think to themselves, you know, I'd kind of like what she's got. I really would. And so at that point you start either asking about it or you start observing and seeing, you know, what goes on. And gradually, as you mature, you let go of the need to analyze everything. And you move that foot or so from the head to the heart and let your heart open and just kneel there in the presence of the Creator. It doesn't really matter how you do that. You can do that sitting in the doctor's office. You can do that walking in the woods. Any time that you can close yourself in with silence and nobody is going to bug you, you can rest in that wonderful silence that is filled with the love of the Creator. If you're having trouble getting started with this, one thing that you could do, people have told me over and over, is to read aloud, if possible, one of the sessions, whether it's a Ra session or a Kuo session, it doesn't matter. The Confederation energy is there in between and surrounding the words, so that as you get the words in, you're also getting the energy of love that is the carrier wave that those words came in on. Now, people will say to me, well, yeah, I understand what you're saying, and I do feel wonderful when I meditate, but how can you tell me to live by faith and unknowing? It's just, you know, this is not a world that allows you to do that. But actually it is. You have to take that first leap into faith before you believe anything. I've given this example before, but it's so perfect that I come back to it. And pardon me for saying it over for the people that have heard it, but my beloved mother, who is no longer in this realm, having passed in 1991, was a very devout woman. And in her middle age, she became dissatisfied with her spiritual life. And she said, Carla, I'm very concerned because I've tried and tried and I just can't pray. I don't think there's anybody there. It's just dead for me and I can't pray. So I told her, I said, well, now don't do this anymore. I said, you've got posts on your bed. I said, I want you to take the right rear bedpost and talk to it instead of praying. And she did. And a couple weeks later, I asked her, well, how's that going? And she said, Carla, she said, the bedpost is talking back to me. That's how it happens. You have to do the first thing feeling completely foolish, because who in the world would ever jump off a cliff? It's the action, it's the absolutely archetypical action of the fool, speaking in terms of the tarot images. And nobody really wants to be so undefended, doing such an enormous leap. Yet once you take the leap, it's the opposite of the roadrunner. You know, the roadrunner is running along, he runs off the cliff, and because he doesn't know he's run off the cliff, he's running along fine. Then he looks down and he thinks, oh, my gosh. And as soon as it hits him that he's running on air, then he realizes, well, you know, roadrunners don't run on air, and zing, down he goes, you know. And the Acme company has to come and get him out of a hole in the ground. It's the opposite of that. Once you jump, you find that your feet have never been so steady. And you have begun to replace these little factoids that you know, like the chakras, you know, speaking in terms of the law of one, you know, you can really get fascinated by various things, the pyramids, the chakras, UFOs, whatever. Instead of that, there is an essence there that you have been able to discover because you had the courage to take the leap into faith. In a way, this section, this selection, is against what people think that they want to do, because they say it right out. As you find yourself, that deeper and deeper essence of yourself, you're going to find yourself in love. You're going to find yourself a creature of unconditional love more and more as you let yourself go deeper. Well, if you already know that, then that's a knowledge. That's not an unknowledge. And yet, if you approach it like that, it won't work. It's a matter of moving from knowledge to insight, from intellect to emotion. Emotion is very, very central to the spiritual life, but not the cheap and easy emotion on top of the water, skimming the water of life. I like to think of, you know, you can watch Entertainment Tonight, and I often do, and they're telling me about people I never met and don't care about who had a baby, and why should I care? But, you know, there it is. It's the buzz. And you're just sort of floating along on top of the ocean of spirituality. Taking that dive into the deeper waters is taking a dive into a strange and beautiful place. But it's a place where you can breathe the water. It's a place that is extremely nourishing to your soul, because it is a place where unconditional love rules. I hope that as you transform, as each seeker among us transforms, that you begin to feel that core of yourself. You begin to know that part of yourself that is beyond words, the essence of self, the self that is the consciousness of unconditional love. And I pray that each and every one of you may tabernacle with the Creator and one day open your eyes and go, oh my heavens, midair really does hold us up, doesn't it? So that's what I think about it. What about you, Jim? You have any comments on faith and unknowing?
In the immortal words of Patrick Swayze in Ghost, ditto. No, I couldn't do any better than that, Rick.
Okay, Monica, have you had any experience?
Wow, I'm pretty stunned. I mean, you just said some pretty profound stuff. And I think I have an inkling of understanding of what you're talking about, because I guess I have had some experiences in faith. But still, there's many times in my life when it's very elusive for me, and I tend to be too much in my intellect. Mm-hmm. And I know the times when I have just surrendered is when things happen. And I think there was it a quo passage that said something about when you make that decision, then there's all these forces that just are ready and waiting to help you.
Oh yeah, it's amazing how everything in nature, everything that's around you, will start talking to you once you open your eyes to the present moment and decide that you want to live consciously in every moment. You start seeing things that make you go kabong. I mean, gosh, so many times I've said a word, and the next sentence that somebody says on the TV is that same word or that same subject. Or you're riding down the expressway, and suddenly, you know, you're talking and you're getting into some really deep stuff. And all of a sudden, all the lights on the expressway start going out as you pass. We've had that happen so often. It's really spooky. It's really beautiful. And I can't tell you the number of times that when Jim and I have agreed or brought ourselves to a certain discovery together, we see a hawk, which happens to be one of our big signals of spirit. You just need to pay attention to the present moment, and not so that, you know, you're drowned in details. That's going back to the analysis, but just opening yourself to the fact that all of nature is dancing with you. All of nature is calling your name. Speaking of names, I was on Winfrey's Monday night conference call last Monday, and a gal told this sad story about, you know, her friend had moved out of town, and she was a real loner. She just had the one friend. And her friend moved away, and her dog died. And she was just feeling horrible. She didn't know what to do or where to go, and didn't know how to get out of this funk that she was in. And I said, well, in the first place, you've got to get another dog, you know, because they are wonderful. Dogs or cats, I mean, they just love you unconditionally, and they make you feel like, oh, my gosh, anything is possible, because that love is just right there. But anyway, at the end of it, I said, would you like me to send you an angel? Now, I've been doing this for years, ever since 71. When somebody, an angel came to me during a seance, and her name was Rose, and asked if she could be in my life. And she explained that I had to accept her before she could do it. But if I said, yes, you can be in my life, then she'd be my angel, and she'd try to help me find lost things, and she'd try to make me feel safe and loved. So I go to Rose whenever somebody is in trouble, and I say, Rose, could you send an angel to so-and-so, and then I'll get a name. Well, the name that I got this time was so anticlimactic. You know, I said, well, this angel says his name is George. And she says, oh, my God, that was the name of my dog. So, you know, these coincidences get amazing. And it's time to pay attention to that, I think. If you can, you know, if you can bring that into your life, it really will reward you again and again.
And how do you stay on track with that? Because I know there have been times when I have done that and things start flowing and synchronicities start happening, and then somehow I find myself back stuck in the minutiae of life and trying to keep track of all these things and getting stressed out. And it's ridiculous. You know, I work part-time. I set my own hours. I don't have to answer to anybody. It's like, you know, I still get stressed out, and I can only imagine. Well, I don't even have to imagine. I know what it was like having a full time job and a child, and you know, all these other things on top of that. And I don't even have those things anymore. And I just think, my gosh, I shouldn't be stressed out anymore. This is ridiculous. So, any suggestions on how to maintain that serenity and that living by faith and being in the moment?
Well, let me at least take a shot at that. And I imagine Jim has a lot to say about that, because he, more than I, is in the world. But I used to be a librarian and work a full-time job and come home and, you know, take care of my house, do my cooking and stuff. And so I know what that's like. I haven't done it for really a long time, but I can remember. But at any rate, I think the first thing that you have to do is take yourself seriously enough to put some discipline into the daily grind, even if it's only 5 minutes in the morning when you first get up to dedicate your day and set your intention for the day. If you can possibly find another 5 or 10 minutes to do a couple readings from books that you find personally inspirational, that is wonderful. And for people that don't even have that time, a friend of mine, Fox, who is a wonderful weaver and a friend of Jim's and mine for a long, long time, and very helpful in in working for LNL Research. She does a lot of volunteering. Well, she has started placing a quote of the day, Q apostrophe U-O-T-E, very cute. and she takes just one little sentence, or at the very most, two or three sentences, and puts them right there on the home page. So you don't even have to go scramble around and find a book. If you happen to like our material, just open bringforth.org, and there it is. There's a thought for the day. It's really helpful to have that thought for the day. It sets you off on the right thing. Of course, by 10:30, it's all worn off, and you're feeling hassled again. But this is where the discipline comes in. When you notice that you're doing that, the great thing of it is you can ask yourself to tune back up. And you have to find out for yourself how that works for you. For me, I sing a lot of hymns because I'm very soft and open to music. I love music. I love singing it. I love listening to it. And that helps me tremendous. If by the time I finish singing a line or two of one of my favorite hymns, you know, I'm back in the game. You know, you can just say, you know, the equivalent of get with it, Rucker, which I do too. You know, sometimes all you need is a kick in the pants, a gentle, loving kick in the pants to say, you know, you remember this, come on, you remember this. But the more discipline that you can bring to that forming of the day, and then at the end of the day too, looking back over the day and seeing what has really thrown you off balance and going, now, why did that bother me? Where was the trigger hidden? And doing some, you know, inner work, some inspection of yourself to see, well, now, let me dig that up. Let me see where that trigger is and get that trigger up out of the ground of my being and out in the sunlight where I can take that old pain and kind of polish it up until it's a gemstone where the pain is recognized, respected, and cleared. And you can't do that if you're not observing yourself. You can't get down on yourself. This is not about self-judgment. It's about loving yourself enough to put a rein on behavior that won't help, and asking yourself to come back to center, and then next time it happens, asking yourself to come back to center, and letting that be the way it is, no matter how many times it happens in a day, it doesn't matter. It always is possible to do. It always is, you know, a very strong thing to tune back up. Nikki, what would you say about that? You're better than I am at this.
Well, in a number of places in the Raw Contact, Ra speaks about the upward spiraling line of light. And I think that pertains in this situation. I think we're here to use Catalyst, and we're here to use it successfully. And then we're here to use it some more, and then to be successful. And it's like a cyclical type of growth. Each time we find that we are able to use our Catalyst successfully, then there's another challenge that presents itself. And we're giving another challenge to exercise our faith and to make it stronger. And by doing this, we continue to get stronger. We continue to get more wise, shall we say, in the way of looking at and dealing with our own growth opportunities. And we're not just spinning in place. We're going a little higher each time. It's, I mean, if you're a person that works out a lot, maybe you lift weights, no matter how strong you get, there's always more weight that you could add to the bar and get stronger and challenge yourself more. And metaphysically, I think we do the same thing. I think before our incarnations, we decided what lessons we wanted to learn and that it might be a good idea to learn them incrementally, that there's a series of opportunities that will present themselves to us in our lifetime, and that if we're able to meet each opportunity successfully, what we're going to do is be more successful in using our catalyst. But each time we face the catalyst, it seems like we're starting again at ground zero. But it just seems that way because, you know, we're facing catalyst once again. but the continual use of faith continues to strengthen that faith. And eventually, we realize that whatever comes our way, we know we can deal with it because we've done it a lot in our lives. So I think we're continuing to travel that upward spiraling line of light throughout our incarnations.
Thank you both. Those are some really excellent points, excellent advice there. And I'll just say, today when I was feeling really stressed after the plumbing problem happened, I came into the bedroom and I just said, stop. Okay, this is stop. I'm on a roller coaster. I want to get off. And I did exactly what you said. I went into the bedroom and just tried to get centered and just took some time where I did nothing and just tried, you know, just went into a meditation and just said, okay, I need some calm. And I discovered, and I've had this happen before, where when at the time when you think you have no time, when you're the most stressed, that's the most important time to stop and get centered. And then the time just kind of expands. But the more I kept thinking I didn't have time to do that, the worse it got. So it's kind of like a reverse psychology. So it did work. Well, a little bit, kind of, sort of. Got to do that some more. We have a live caller. This is Karen in the desert. I'm going to unmute you so you can join our show. Karen, are you there?
I am, and I have my 9-month-old, so the whining is not me, but...
That's okay. That's fine. That's wonderful.
Okay.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. I just started... I had bought the download of the book, the Law of One book, for quite a while ago, and I just started. I really am really enjoying it again, and I'm not very far into it, so I'm going to ask kind of a basic question about God purpose, you know, when we, and Jim was just talking a little bit about life lessons, but in a more comprehensive way, do we each come with a specific mission or purpose? Obviously, Carla, you know, played a very important role in a lot of people's lives, but and Jim, you know, with the research and the bringing forward of this material. And was that a life mission, and do we each have one?
I think we do, and it may not always be what the outer world would see as an exalted mission, but a mission that carries a real strong purpose for us in the overall balancing of our, what Ra called the mind-body-spirit totality, this entity that has existed since before time and which has had thousands of incarnations and learned countless lessons. There's always something remaining for us that we can pursue in this third density illusion. And there's I guess a theme is a good term for it, a way of looking at our lives, a certain approach we're going to take, a certain quality that we want to pursue that will balance the overall being that we are in our heart, which, you know, is the one creator. The mind-body-spirit complex totality is just the term that Ra gave for this, but each of us is pursuing an understanding of our basic self and how that self is one with the Creator, how we can be of service to others, and how we are infinite in our natures. And I believe that each of us then, before the incarnation, decides that there is a certain quality to the incarnation that we want to pursue, that we want to marinate ourselves in, shall we say. And we want to perfect that within our being, and that's really what we do. And we might do it in the most mundane of ways. Whatever kind of job you have, whether you're a server in a restaurant, whether you dig ditches, whether you're a lawyer, whatever you are, what you have to do is to look at kind of distill the process of your service and what's going on there, and see the essence, the heart of what you're doing. And when you do that, it always has something to do with love, and it always has something to do with being of service to others and of realizing more of yourself. And the way you do that, I think, is in each person unique process, and that becomes the mission, you might call it. You're here to accomplish this mission impossible if you're willing to accept the task, as Tom Cruise's character said.
Is this time a more particular time for certain kinds of lessons in terms of awakening and those kinds of things? Because when you talk about thousands of incarnations, then it just makes it kind of blend in with everything else. But it seems special.
I think it has accelerated lately. The last 30 years or so, I've seen a slow but steady acceleration of the light. This light is getting clearer. The fourth density light is beginning to take over from third. And as that fourth density light intermingles with third density, it's bringing ever more beams of truth. And the fourth density light holds a denser amount of awareness, of information, if you will. So that when you click on that on your biocomputer, and you have the drop-down menu, instead of having five choices, you've got like 500 choices. And you see that 500 times better as far as seeing the truth about yourself. This is often an extraordinarily painful time for people, because when you see the truth about yourself, it's not all good, according to our culture. And we're all way into judging ourselves, you know, and say, well, that's terrible. You know, I'm so selfish to want this, and I'm so shallow to want that. But, you know, we came here to hold the light. We didn't come here to be, you know, perfect people. We came here to let the light flow through us and out into the world. That's everybody's first job. It's a job that we can all do, even like I've found it to be true, even in the sick bed, even when there were times I honestly thought I was close to death. I was still able, and sometimes more able because of not having anything else around, but the pain and the desire to serve. And, you know, I wanted to go with the desire to serve, and I would get into exalted states more easily, I think, because of the intensity of what I was going through in my body. And you got baby? Sounds like it. Anyway, I think that when it comes to outer service, not everybody has an outer service that you'd think would be an outer service. Maybe the outer service for you is to grow a baby, is to grow a family that's healthy and loves each other and knows the right from wrong and gets a good start in life. That's more than enough. I mean, Ross said one time, if one is eliminated, are not all eliminated? So, you know, if you're just the mom of an only child and you're working to serve that little infant baby to bring that child up, that's fully a good outer service. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to be something glamorous and something
right.
public. So think about the things in your life that in the outer life where you can see, yes, I am being of service. And then let those happen as they happen. I don't think it helps to say, I want to do this service and then go after it. It's much better to say, Spirit, I want to be of service more than anything in this world. Please send me that which I need to do in order to be of service. And just say that, you know, every day. And just wait and see what is attracted to you by the rule, the law of attraction that you set up in the whole universe by your intention.
I appreciate that. Thank you. And thank you for everything you've done to bring forth this material. I'm very grateful for it.
Well, thank you so much. It's our pleasure indeed.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for calling in, Karen. And feel free to call into the show anytime.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Well, that was nice.
That was great.
Having a caller. Okay. We love having callers. Okay, we just have a few minutes left, so I think a couple of quick questions. This is part of a two-part question from Sirson. I'm not sure if I'm saying that right. Quick quick question. To what degree do you attribute the accuracy of the raw material? Do you believe it is 100% accurate regarding what Ra has said, not how we interpreted it? I have read that the raw material is supposedly the most accurate channeled information anywhere on Earth at 85 to 90% accuracy. Very impressive regardless, I say. Best wishes and thanks again.
Well, that's very nice. Thank you, Thurston. I don't know. I've never cared. It's enough for me that a lot of people have said that it was helpful. I think that truth is a very subjective thing, and I'm not trying to dodge things. I do think that because of the fact that the Ra group was able to put me under and do this communication at the trance level, there was a degree of accuracy possible there that I could never have managed if I had been conscious, because I would inevitably be thinking things like, I don't know anything about this, I don't know what that word means, you know, things like that. And I was able to get myself out of the way, or they were able to move me gently out of the way so that they could have a conversation with Don, who, you know, is probably the best questioner we could have possibly had, because he'd been studying in this area since mid-50s, and here this is the 80s, so it's like 30 years of experience at questioning and trying to find out how things work. So I think it's probably relatively accurate, but as far as figuring out just how accurate, I have never troubled myself to do so. Jim, have you thought about that, sweetheart?
No, not really. I think, like you do, that whatever material a person reads, if it strikes a chord of recognition within your heart, then that material is for you. And you really don't need to worry about, well, what percentage of accurate is it? What you need to be concerned about is trying to make it come to life in your life. And you know, that little, that still small voice within you is the one that will say, yeah, that's pretty much on the beam. Let's go with that. So, you know, I don't think percentages are important. I think you will be able to determine what's for you by that feeling that comes from you when you're exposed to material.
Here's a little story that sort of ties a couple of things together that we've talked about, like, you know, synchronicities and trusting the spirit and all that. A long time ago, there was a fellow named Estes, and he used a screen name that was like Dragon something or something Dragon, I can't remember. Anyway, he was very active in our forums back in the 80s and the early 90s. And he was a Ra scholar that knew as much as anybody has ever known about, you know, chapter and verse in terms of where things are and what exactly what the quote was and where it is and the material, that kind of thing. Well, he developed a concern, and it's the concern a lot of people come up with, because service to self and service to others sounds very simple until you get into it. You discover that every time you're of service to others, it comes back to bless you 100 times, 1,000 times. It's incredible. And so aren't you really being of service to yourself? Well, he decided more and more that he was angry about that. And he started writing very damaging, very slighting, very clever denunciations of us and our work and Ra and the whole thing. And I kept getting, I was active on the forums then, because we had a lot fewer people that knew about us, and it was easier to do everything. I cannot do everything now, and thank God for Gary, because he answers the email now. But at the time, I was involved in the forums, and so I kept responding to people who wanted me to defend myself or defend Ra or whatever, and I would say, no, it's not important. You know, the work stands there. It's done. It's out there for people to see. It's not important what people think of me. Let them read the material and see if it helps them. That's all we've ever wanted, is if we could be of service to somebody, then here it is. It's available for free. So about, I guess, a week after this blew up in one final gargantuan, messy, nasty thing, and he quit the forums forever, we received a check in the mail for enough to print Wanderer's Handbook. We did not have the money to print it. I had it ready, but we did not know how we were going to print it. And the gal said, you know, I was going to go on a cruise with one of the people that had been attacking me. And I'm going to give up that cruise and give you the money for it. That's really where it belongs right now. And she sent us enough that we could publish a Wanderer's Handbook, which I think has been, you know, to a lot of people, it's been a light in the darkness that let them know at least that they were not alone, and has helped them. So that's the way it all works, you know, if you can just stay open and do your work, you know, whatever it is, and not worry about whether, well, am I doing my service? Well, if you're doing it with love, you're doing your service. If you're Xeroxing all day, or if you're wiping up baby poop, you know, and taking care of a little one or anything, it doesn't matter, because the love that you put into it is developing it into a sacred act, a sacred ritual. And you are in the Lord's house, that huge creation-wide house of those who love and are loved and know it.
I just got to add real quick, and then we're out of time. I saw on another channeled source that was talking about the Law of One, and they said, with a very authoritative air, the Law of One is X percent, and this may even be the one that they're referring to, I don't know, but it gave a number, and I don't know, it was 80% or 90% or whatever, accurate. And I found that rather amusing, because that presupposes that the person telling us that knows whether it's accurate or not. You know, I mean, how did that channeled source be in a position to know whether the Law of One was accurate or not? You'd have to kind of presuppose that you trust that source to tell you whether another source is even accurate. You see what I'm saying? I thought that was
funny. Right. Yeah, I think that's right.
Okay. Well, we are out of time, and thanks, everyone. Thanks for calling in, Karen, and thanks to everyone else that submitted questions on the Bring Forth Forum, which we didn't get to yet, but we will get to them next week. We'll be here next week at 8 o'clock Eastern, Friday, October 5th. In the meantime, check us out at llresearch.org and bringforth.org. That's bring, the number 4, th.org. Carla and Jim, as always, it's an honor to be here with you. Thank you so much for your words of wisdom. I think this is one show I'm going to go back and listen to again in the archives at blogtalkradio.com/llresearch, because there was a lot of good stuff said tonight. A lot of it spoke to me. So thank you very much.
Thank you so much. We appreciate it.
You have a good night.
Good night to you, too.
With every waking breath I breathe, I see what life has dealt to me. With every sadness I deny, I feel a chance inside.
Oh, my. Come soon. heart.